Thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to a podcast from CelticUnderground.net. I'm Harry Brady and this is podcast number 212. You will recall in the summer that we did a podcast with John Paul Taylor, the then newly appointed Celtic fan liaison officer, who had returned to the club following his 15-year career in the Celtic ticket office. And his role was to be the main point of contact at the club for the ordinary supporters. Well, we are now 8 months down the line into that role, and I thought it would be appropriate to revisit John Paul and discuss with him how he's found that first 8 months in the new position, and also to discuss some of the challenging aspects of that period, including obviously the Green Brigade, and to talk about some of the things that the club are planning for the future. The other thing that prompted me to have the discussion with John Paul was the recent fans forum, which I was fortunate enough to attend, some of the discussion about whether that should be an open forum, closed forum or whatever. So John Paul gives the club's aspect on how this came to be, reason for the invitees, thought process around the structure, etc. So hopefully you find the following 45 minutes or so informative, and at the end I'll give you ways that you can contact John Paul if you've got any specific issues or questions with Celtic. He's on Twitter, but I know lots of people who listen to this are not on Twitter. So this is me, Harry Brady, and this is him, John Paul Taylor. Okay, so I am joined once again by John Paul Taylor. How are you doing, John Paul?
I'm very well, thank you.
So last time we spoke, we went through all the things to prove that you were a Celtic fan. Although I saw a great quote yesterday, Fergus McCann, about what makes somebody Celtic-minded. Everybody who's an employee for Celtic is Celtic-minded.
Absolutely, I would say so. It's an interesting term. I don't know where, I'm actually not sure where that really sort of came from, the whole Celtic-minded thing, but I'd like to think I was Celtic-minded, yes.
Yeah, so we've established that, and you are now, for many of us, a buffer between the club, or a buffer for the club, or a point of liaison, depending how you want to put it. Probably some days you find like you feel like a punchbag.
Punchbag's probably a good point for it, yeah. And some days, aye, definitely.
So, how long have you been now being in the Celtic supporter liaison officer? How long have you been that now?
It's coming up 8 months.
Right.
8 months, aye. So it's flowing in. But it's been quite good because I've picked an easy time to come in, which has been quite good because there's not really that much been happening, so it's allowed me to bed in without really too much.
No, you've had nothing at all to deal with?
Nah.
No issues with the support?
No, it's all been very
No new pieces of legislation to cause issues with the support?
No, not really.
No movement of fixtures for TV?
No, I mean, I think like all of those things, it's been a nice gentle. Next season will probably be different, but it's been gentle in terms of my starting point anyway.
So, we did the podcast just as you were, you looked about 15 when we did the podcast last time.
Yeah.
You now look a bit older than that.
Absolutely, certainly feel a bit older than it as well. For anybody that's listening, I was being sarcastic about my earlier point about a general introduction. It's been lively to say the least, but it's been fun.
Yeah, so what have you been up to? What have you been doing?
Overall, since I started, it's really just trying to get some engagement going with different fans groups, listening to what people are telling us, where we're getting it wrong, and then taking that information, putting it into different reports, if you like, that go to the board, and then the board analyse what we're telling them, and hopefully they can start to look at making changes and what needs to be done to try and give people a better Celtic experience. But a whole host of things, Brian, to be honest with you, without picking out specific points, you know, different groups that I've met with, apart from the obvious in terms of Celtic supporters groups, we've met with the SPFL, with Focus and Police Scotland, looking to try to develop a supporters charter with a complaints handling procedure for the club. Quite a number of face-to-face meetings with various different individual supporters who wanted to come in and air their views. A couple of weeks ago I was in Ireland for a Q&A with the Irish Association. We had a supporters forum meeting here with the club's executive. also my social media in terms of Twitter keeps me busy, and then looking at plans for next season and developing, you know, what we've got at the moment and trying to take that forward and trying to add to the Celtic Park experience. And then you've also got the safe standing issue as well that, again, the club's trying to push on, and I'm kind of being involved in the periphery of that as well. So quite a number of different things going on at the moment.
Well, one of the things I wanted to talk to you about was the fans forum bit, but if we leave that and cover off some of the other bits. First of all, safe standing. I know that's something that a lot of people are interested in. Where are we with safe standing?
The safe standing, we've got an application in the Glasgow City Council for just under 3,000 spaces in the north-east lower corner. So as things stand at the moment, what we do...
Just to clarify, is that more or less section 111?
Well, 111 would be part of it, yes, so that would be part of that area. I think it would extend 110, 111, 112, so we'd kind of cover that corner. We've now established that it's not a government issue, it's very much a local issue. It would depend on Police Scotland's view on it. However, they would not ultimately carry the decision. They would provide guidance, but ultimately the decision sits with Glasgow City Council. So that's where the application sits right now. It sits with Glasgow City Council.
Have you, or are you able to say, if you've had any feedback from the police on their position on it?
I think the last time that it was discussed with them, I think that there was an indication that they were warming to the idea. I think initially when it was first put forward that the view was it wouldn't be something that they would be keen on, but I get the impression and I believe that opinion may be softening. It's just a view, to be honest with you, so I wouldn't want to quote anybody on it, but I kind of get the feeling that maybe their opinion is softening a wee bit on it.
And have we investigated what type of safe standing it would be?
It would be the same as what's employed in the German clubs, to be honest with you. So it's rail seats, and the rail seats would be those that you'd see at Borussia Dortmund and Hanover and the various different German clubs that employ safe standing. So it would be the same model installed by probably the same people.
And Glasgow City Council, where are they with it?
I don't know. I genuinely don't know. And I wouldn't want to guess. I wouldn't want to proffer an opinion. I think we just have to wait and see where it goes.
And if it was going anywhere, would it be done pre or post the Commonwealth Games?
I think it really depends.
Say, just to put in context, if you got a phone call this afternoon saying, okay, the safety committee's going to approve safe standing.
Mm-hmm. I think if we got a phone call today, then the likelihood is that we would try and do something in advance of the Commonwealth Games, because ultimately what you're providing is a seat. So it's a seat with the option of safe standing due to the rails in front. So I think that we would probably want to try and do it beforehand. But again, you kind of get your head getting ahead of yourself a wee bit in the respect that I don't want to preempt anything until such times as we get the go-ahead. But if we were to get the go-ahead, we would be hopeful that we could do something so it was ready in time for the start of next season, certainly within the corner.
So you said, what did you say, 3,000 seats?
I think it's 2,990, roughly.
Right. Is that reducing slightly the capacity of what's there just now?
No, it's one for one.
One for one,
it's
identical.
One for one, yeah.
Okay. Now, obviously I touched on that, and you mentioned where it is in terms of location, and I said it's at section 111.
Mm-hmm.
Where are we with the Green Brigade?
The situation with the group is as it was, is that I think people are under the impression that there was a ban or there was a ban put in the group. There isn't. The group aren't banned, and you've seen from the St Johnstone game last week that they came along, boys bought tickets. The group, it was relocated from 111, and some of the lads decided to take alternative seats and some of the lads decided to take refunds. But the boys that are trying to keep the group going came along with the match against St Johnstone last week. I thought they added to the atmosphere, and there were no problems. And if they wanted to come and do that every week, I don't see it being an issue, to be honest with you. So that is where we are. You know, we would encourage some form of dialogue, and certainly going through the close season and into next season, then who knows, hopefully we can re-establish some engagement with the group and maybe see them back at Celtic Park.
And if there was a safe standing area, would you envisage them being in it?
Do you know, I don't know, because I don't know what the policy is in terms of offering it out. I don't know who will get the first choice. I don't know if it will be an application process. We haven't really kind of got that far at the moment. But there's nothing to say that they can, and there's nothing to say that they won't. So it goes back to the point, you know, in terms of are the group banned? No, the group are not banned. So we just need to be clear in terms of what the application process is, because I do think it would attract a lot of demand, to be honest with you. And you have to be mindful for the people that sit in that area and around that area as well. So some considerations to be taken into account, but nothing to stop it.
And you mentioned there a fans charter that the club have been working on.
Yeah.
Slightly connects in with the Green Brigade, mm-hmm. I would imagine. Mm-hmm. What do you envisage from a fans charter? What are you trying to achieve?
Really, from a fans charter, really what I want to try and get to is the same fair and equitable treatment of fans across the board at Celtic Park, so that when supporters come to Celtic Park, they feel that they've been treated fairly, they've been treated reasonably, and if they're not happy about it, then they've got a route to follow, so they've got a complaints process that they can then follow up and be clear and comfortable that there will be a transparent process of that particular complaint being investigated and hopefully a satisfactory outcome for them. But ultimately the fans charter is all about making sure that people feel welcome at Celtic Park, they feel that their support is valued. And there's a commitment from the club to say that there's a set of standards that we would like to put in place as a bare minimum. So hopefully it makes everyone at the club accountable to provide a level of service for fans that we think would be the very least that they should be expecting when they come to Celtic Park.
Now that's something that's within the remit of the Celtic staff and stewards.
Yes, absolutely.
One of the areas that's caused discontent amongst certain sections of the support is Focus, mm-hmm. and the policing of it. Now, you've had some meetings with Focus.
Yes.
Has there been any changing in police style that you've noticed in your dialogue with them in the 18 months?
In terms of the style of policing, speaking as a supporter going to matches, I definitely noticed more of a presence, particularly at away games, over the years. I was never really aware of the police at away games, apart from what you would normally expect, one or two policemen here and there. But some games this season I've gone to and I've been really taken aback. You know, Tynecastle, Easter Road spring to mind, where the level of policing has felt disproportionate to me. Having spoken to Police Scotland and Focus, what they have said is that they would be happy to reduce the level of police officers that are deployed at matches commensurate with the behaviour at matches. So I think as long as we can demonstrate that we are a well-behaved support, that we don't cause any issues, then we will start to see it reducing. That's certainly the commitment that they've given to us, so I would like to think that they would hold true to that.
Okay, so that's one of the outside agencies that would impact on the charter, the ability to deliver a certain level of service at the game. One of the other areas that might impact on it is fixture lists,
yes.
Times of kick-off, dates of kick-off.
Yes.
How are we getting on there? Because we are peculiar to every other club in Scotland.
Yeah.
Where our TV revenue isn't from the driver, whereas every other club in Scotland needs TV revenue.
It's a difficult one because obviously we've got the biggest support in Scotland, so when our fixtures are rescheduled, we receive more complaints than anyone else because people have tried to take advantage of low-cost travel and they've booked in advance and then ultimately end up disappointed because the game's been changed. What we've tried to explain is that as part of your membership of the SPFL, you give over your TV rights. So the SPFL then sell these as a bundle to the best bid, so whichever broadcaster wishes to give us the most money, your rights are sold as part of that bundle. We, as you rightly point out, don't solely rely on the TV income. Most other clubs do, and I think if they were told that they had to play their games at 11 o'clock on a Thursday night, they would probably agree, mm-hmm. just simply because they need that revenue. It has been put forward that we should opt out of the deal. We can't do it, we don't own our rights, they're sold as part of the bundle, so you can't opt out, you can't say we don't want the £1 million because you're in it whether you like it or whether you don't. So we really don't have any we don't have any control over it, to be honest with you. And some recently, you know, I think that the St Johnstone game that was rescheduled within 2 or 3 weeks was obviously really disappointing. And we raised it with the SPFL, and we also spoke about a minimum period. What they did tell us was that whenever that's been discussed by broadcasters, the broadcasters have highlighted that if there was to be a minimum period that they could give notice on, it would be shorter rather than longer. So they would be looking at a shorter period, maybe 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks. That being the case, and if that was written in as a rule, what you would most likely find is everything would just be 3 weeks, because they would have 3 weeks to tell you. So why would they tell you any earlier than that? Mm-hmm. So you know, the worry is that you would end up being worse off by trying to get them to commit, get the broadcasters to commit to a rule. It hasn't helped that the two main broadcasters, BT, have obviously put a lot of pressure on Sky this year, so there's a lot of competition between both of those, which isn't really helping because they aren't working together. Obviously, they're working as two separate companies, trying to get audience figures from one another, trying to take audience figures from one another. So that has added to the difficulties that we've experienced this year in terms of the short notice. But there is no easy answer to the TV scheduling, unfortunately.
Can we not even try and go back to the days of 9-10 years ago when we had a fixed time for the Scottish game? Are the TV broadcasters just not interested in it?
They're not really at the moment, because BT are like the new kids in the block, if you like, and they really want to challenge Sky. They're not willing to do anything that accommodates Sky or makes it easier for Sky, so they're really just looking for what's best for them, and that's the thing that they're going to focus on at the moment. So we're seeing Friday nights, we're seeing, again, the early kickoffs on Sundays, we've seen, I think, 5:30 here as well for the first time in the Ross County game. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of money at stake for both broadcasters, and at the moment, unfortunately, the fans that attend the matches aren't their priority. It's the fans that are going to sit and watch it in the house or in the pub are going to be their priority at the moment. But it would be nice if we could get something settled again and go back. I mean, our preference will always be we want to play games at 3 o'clock on a Saturday. That is always going to be Celtic's starting point. But as I say, when you're tied in as part of the bundle, you have to play when you're told.
I suppose, being pragmatic about it, 3 o'clock on a Saturday, that ship has sailed. In fact, if we ever got what we seek, which is to get out of Scottish football, and we got to England, we'd have even fewer 3 o'clock on the Saturday games.
Most likely, to be honest with you. I mean, certainly over the years, Manchester United, if you look at when they play, I mean, I don't recall them playing too often at 3 o'clock on a Saturday, and certainly at home. But, you know, that would be one of the things. Maybe that's one of the trade-offs that you would accept as part of a change of environment, that you would play at a different time and a different day. But again, we just probably have to wait and see how that kind of transpires.
I suppose one of the criticisms of the club in that, because I take on board all the points you're making, is, yeah, but we also changed the fixture ourselves in the new year, the Kilmarnock fixture.
Yeah, and I think that in fairness there, we probably should have made that a wee bit clearer. Earlier this season, as far as I'm aware, the SPFL gave all the clubs in the Premiership the opportunity to take a winter break on that particular weekend. Obviously due to finance or whatever else, we were the only club that elected to take it. In hindsight, I think that what we should have done is we should have earmarked that and highlighted it for a potential change earlier than we did. I think we gave notice 5 or 6 weeks out that we would be taking the break, and obviously we got the opportunity to go to Turkey, and that gave the manager the chance to play some, you know, peripheral players and give them a bit more game time, that type of thing, and give the players a chance to recharge their batteries, as it were. But yeah, I think that we probably should have highlighted that a bit earlier than we did.
Okay, one of the other areas, as you mentioned, you are on Twitter a lot.
Yes.
And you're easily accessible.
Yeah, I'd like to think so. I think that's what all really comes with part of the job, is that I think you do have to be accessible, whether it's via Twitter or on the phone or on the email or just being available at Celtic Park, you know, to meet with people on a face-to-face basis. So, yeah, try and make myself as accessible as I possibly can.
And one of the criticisms on and off through the season, particularly the issues with the Green Brigade, has been a distance between the club and the fans. Now, through your Twitter, and also you mentioned the fans forums, you've been trying to tackle that. So what's the thought process behind the fan meetings that you've had?
With the forum, one of the things that I wanted to do when I first came in was to try and bridge that gap if possible. So again, you know, try and get the fans to have an opportunity to meet with the club's executive, if you like, and put their points to them. When I first came into the role, what I found was that I was having different meetings with different people, different groups or whatever, and points of view would be put forward, and most of the time I would take a note of them and then I would feed them back. As I was saying, I do a monthly report anyway, so I highlight what the key issues are, but I just felt that there was an opportunity there for people to get in front of the executive and then say, right, well, you know, rather than speaking to like John Paul and saying, right, this is what we would like, you know, you're in front of us, so why don't you tell us, you're the person that makes the decision, explain it to us, give us a bit of rationale, and then hopefully makes it clear as to why we make the decisions as a club that we do. So I kind of looked at that as being the starting point, and then how we would maybe run it. I thought about the idea of opening the Kerrydale, making it available for 400 or 500 fans. That was an option, and then I don't know, I'm not sure whether or not that would have worked for us. I think there has to be an element of, or a level of control and management, if you like, and I think that would be difficult to do that. I could be wrong, but I felt that it might have been. So what I wanted to do was look at what other clubs were doing, and Newcastle United are doing something where they do a forum, which includes various different supporters from around the support, if you like. And it's 12 months and you sit in the forum for 12 months and you get the chance four times a year to sit in front of the club's executive and ask your questions, and then the minutes are documented and publicised and they go out to the wider audience. So I wanted to try and do something along the lines of what they were doing, and we had the first meeting two Wednesdays ago, where again with the club's executive along with various different supporters, most of the main supporters groups were represented, and such as the Affiliation, the Association, the Irish Association, the North American Federation, the Celtic Supporters Trust were also there, and then we also had some various different message boards, bloggers, and then just season ticket holders, if you like, that we asked to come along. And that was really just people that I've kind of I've encountered over my sort of 20 years with the club, sort of 15 in ticketing, and then since I've come back, it's been people that have expressed opinions about the way the club's been run and whether they think it's right, whether they think it's wrong. So I know that there was a suggestion, you know, it was all hand-picked to suit the club and things like that, but that genuinely wasn't the case. I mean, you know, you had people there putting their views forward, and the people that were in attendance would testify that there was some quite heated debate that took place, and I felt that it was worthwhile on the night, to be honest with you.
Well, you had a pretty impressive array. You had the whole executive team there. I was impressed.
We did, to be fair, and but I think it shows the level, you know, how serious the club are about it in terms of trying to listen to the people that were there and listen to the views of the fans. I mean, what we'd said to the people that we'd asked along was, give us your questions in advance in order that we can make sure that we're going to make the best use of the time available. And so the questions that were raised in advance, but certainly discussed on the night, were all the questions that came from Celtic fans. You know, we didn't make the questions up. They came directly from Celtic fans, and I think that they certainly did address the main issues at the moment. If, you know, for anyone that's read it, we spoke about the Offensive Behaviour Act, we spoke about policing in Stewarden, we spoke about the Green Brigade, we spoke about plans for next season, we spoke about disabled facilities at Celtic Park and how we could improve them, we spoke about the coach park, what's happening with it, will it stay where it is, will it change, we spoke about the potential for going to play our first two qualifying matches at another stadium. So, you know, I consider these are all kind of important issues at the moment, and these were all discussed on the night, so I felt that we did address a lot of the points.
I suppose you've touched on one of the criticisms there, is how you get the mix of people, how you get the right people along, and how you get an open dialogue.
And that's always going to be difficult, and I accept that. I've spoken to some people since who put forward their own views and said, well, they thought maybe they should have been there, and I get that. And what we've said is that, you know, on the basis that we keep them going, we will ask other people to come along, we'll ask other people to participate. The reason that I wanted to get things off and running in February when I did was, if we're going to do four a year, you know, mid to late February, you then started to go well into the first quarter. And if you don't do it in the first quarter, do you find reasons not to do it? You know, I just wanted to make sure that we stuck to the timetable, so we got it in within the first quarter. We did say at the time that we would review the way that we did it. We would take feedback from the people who were there. We would take feedback from other fans who perhaps weren't there that think we should do it in a different way. So we're always open to, you know, to people's suggestions as to what's the best way to do it. And I'm happy to, you know, modify it, change it around, ask some new people if they want to come along. It's really just trying to be as transparent as we possibly can and giving people an opportunity to put their points forward, maybe meet with the executive in a way that we can control, we can manage, and we can make sure that we can maximise the time that's available for us and make sure that we get strong output.
It's interesting you mentioned about the half 400 or 500 in the Kerrydale suite. Actually, I understand the criticism of having a handpicked, for want of a better way of putting it, group of people at a meeting, but the contrary to that is I go to the AGM every year.
Yep.
I, right now, if you gave me the pictures of everybody at the AGM, I could pick out 75% of the people who are going to stand up and speak at the AGM. Because there's a certain type of person, you've got to have a certain type of personality in general to want to stand up in front of 400 or 500 people. That's a brave thing to do.
It's not an easy thing to do, to be fair, and it takes a lot of confidence to stand in front of that number of people and articulate your point. So, you know, perhaps it, you know, it would be done in a controlled manner. Again, from the people in the panel, obviously they would have to be confident that they were able to speak freely, well, freely, but, you know, express themselves in front of that number of people, because it's intimidating, you know, doing that type of public speaking. But look, I know that people have their own views on it. People think maybe it's handpicked, but it's not the case. The objective of it is to be as transparent as possible and to give people an opportunity to say, I'm a Celtic fan, here's what I like, here's what I don't like. You're the people that make the decisions that affect me every day as a Celtic fan. Can you explain them to me, please? And that really is what it's all about. It's not about, you know, making sure we get the right people to ask the right questions. What would be the point of doing that? There is no point to doing that at all.
And it's one thing having people speak. It's another thing having people listen.
Well, again, I mean, that's a fair enough point. I mean, quite often in recent months, and I dare say down the history of the club over the years, the club have made statements or stated their position on certain issues.
Now, there are other clubs who like to make a lot of statements every day. So.
Well, there are people that kind of come and go at certain football clubs and make statements and then you never see them or hear from them again. But then maybe they're still in the background. I don't know. Who knows what goes on at other clubs. But no, from our point of view, we like to think that if we make statements, it's because we mean them and it's because that they're factual and they're truthful. And, you know, sometimes people take those on board and take them at face value. And then other times maybe people don't think that it's quite what they want to hear. I don't know. I can't really speak for other people. All I would say is that we try and do things as openly and honestly and truthfully and fairly as we possibly can.
There was two areas that because I was fortunate enough to be at the meeting. I'm one of those hand-picked people who was fed a question. There was two areas that are particular bugbears of mine that were raised at it that quite interesting. One of them being communication between the fans. Now, obviously, having a forum is one way of getting that communication out. If you get the supporters clubs and affiliation and whatever, and you get various blogs that are well read, then you've got spread of the message.
That was the thinking behind it. And you've got elected representatives there, so the people from the affiliation, the people from the association, people from the Irish Association, people from the North American Federation, people from the Supporters Trust, they're all elected. So they're elected representatives of what you would say would be a fairly significant number of Celtic fans. So you know, you're asking those people as part of their role to represent their constituents, if you like. So that's a big chunk of the support straight away. And then, as you know, if you then go back to the people with an online presence, again, fairly substantial readership. So you would again think that represents a fairly broad number of Celtic fans. But it may well be that, you know, we didn't include some others that people think should have been there, and I'd like to think that we, that's something we'll be able to do the next time we have a forum, as it were.
One area that was discussed in terms of getting that message out was to do it more directly. Somebody complained about Clyde's phone-in.
Yes.
I don't listen to. I haven't listened to. I only listened to it for comedy value about 2 years ago. And was it Adrian that came back and said that the club's actually looking at trying to do some media platform that the fans can interact on?
Yeah, it was put forward. One of the guys put forward that he listens to Radio Clyde and he listens to the phone-in, and he gets frustrated, and I'm sure most people that listen to the forum do, just simply because you've got people who are expressing an opinion on something that may not, they don't really have any expertise on. So whether if it comes to Celtic and they talk about specific areas of the business, you know, maybe it might be ticketing or whatever, the guys on the panel don't know. They don't know anything about ticketing, but they sometimes offer out advice or opinions which are misleading, for one. I think there's also there's a frustration that when anyone makes mention of any other clubs, it's always linked into Abbott Celtic or like that, mm-hmm. Abbott Celtic Park's like that. But that wasn't the question. But we seem to get lumped in, particularly when it's a negative. So his point was that if the club could do a phone-in where Celtic officials, maybe current employees, former players, etc., could go on the panel and Celtic fans could call in and make their points to the panel, and the panel would be able to answer them from a Celtic perspective, and then you would like to think that the information that was going out was factual and it was correct and it was current. The danger of it is, and it is something that the club has looked at and considered, the danger of it is, though, is the nature of the calls that you would maybe get, that, you know, the content from those calls. So if someone phones in and they are particularly critical about a specific player, or arguably critical of the manager and the manager's tactics, it becomes very difficult for an employee to endorse it, and then it lacks, you run the risk of losing credibility, because you then take the club's point of view, mm-hmm. Every time. So you look at it on the basis of, you can't criticise the manager, you can't criticise the players, you can't be critical of the club, you can't see anything that's against the club, and then it starts to lose a wee bit of credibility on that basis. So it would be more like a kind of helpline than a hotline, as it were. But
Celtic Samaritans.
Maybe. It's just, the idea of it, I think, is a good idea and it's well intentioned, but when you get really down to the nuts and bolts, it then starts to be difficult, because the people that sit on the panels at Radio Clyde or anywhere else are completely independent of the clubs, and therefore can pretty much say what they like, with the exception of Derek Johnson, yeah. And I'm not sure who else maybe sits on that panel, but
Gordon Dale
probably as well. So
Fraser Wishart,
Fraser Wishart as well. Aye.
Do you know what was pointed out to me? You don't have to comment this, because I don't listen to Clyde anymore. It was pointed out to me that when Celtic have an early kickoff, Clyde starts at 2 as normal, and when Rangers have an early kickoff, Clyde starts at whatever time, 12:15, 12:30.
It's interesting actually, because when I was coming to the match here on Saturday, and I had the radio on in the car, and I happened to be on Radio Clyde, and there was a match on at East Fife, and I did think it was quite surprising, because I wasn't sure how big the audience would be for a match at East Fife, but
they were talking about it like it was a real game of football that mattered. I happened to switch on Clyde for a minute, and that's what prompted the conversation, and I thought, wow, they're telling me this is real stuff, that this is important.
I was quite surprised, because I'd normally either get Five Live or Talk Sport on, so I don't know why it was set at Radio Clyde, but it was set at Radio Clyde, and I was like, oh, there's a game on at Bayview? Really? Oh, well. So there was a game on at Bayview, so they must have started early at the weekend, aye. I don't know how it finished, to be honest with you, because I was coming to your game.
But then that's the other point. So the massive news in Scottish football in the past, maybe again in the future, was Rangers going bust. Mm-hmm. Can you really have a Celtic media outlet where people phone up and people would be bound to mention it, and then employees of Celtic sit there and say it's nothing to do with Celtic next quarter?
That's when it becomes difficult, when you get any of those types of calls and that level of detail, then it does, and it's unfair on the people that would be taking the calls, because you're putting them in an unenviable position, but go back to what you were saying, it's like you know, I don't know. And most times people genuinely won't know what the situation is. So, yeah, good idea, well-intentioned, but it feels like maybe just too difficult to...
I suppose it's just part of the greater level of communication that needs to happen.
I think so, yeah. But I think from our point of view as a club, I think that the level of engagement and the communication that we have with our fans is probably as good as anybody, to be honest with you. And I talk about that in the UK, not just in Scotland, but within the UK. I mean, I met with a few clubs in England over the last couple of months, and when I spoke to Liverpool, I was really surprised at how kind of guarded they are when it comes to fan engagement. You know, it's four meetings a year with the fans forum, and that's really it. And if you don't put your questions through the fans forum, or if you're a supporters group and you're not represented at the fans forum, or you don't get your points in by a certain date to be raised at the fans forum by the elected members of the fans forum, that's it. You don't get any, you know, you don't get offered in and get the chance to sit down and, you know, express your views in the same way that certainly you do at Celtic Park anyway. So I think that we're pretty good on it, to be honest with you. But
you ever thought about doing things like the manager's press conference live on Celtic YouTube, for example, or on Celtic, I think, on the website, or the AGM live or stuff like that?
Aye, I think that, you know, people are always looking for unique content, to be honest with you, and it's something that we've got that we can, you know, use as, you know, as a, we can get a wee bit of leverage with, to be honest with you, because it's our content and we can use it in whichever way we want. So, yeah, I think all of these things are certainly up for debate and certainly should be considered, yeah.
Okay, all of that is about enhancing the fan engagement, because we have a challenge. We have 40-odd thousand season book holders, and almost half of them don't see the need to turn up every week.
Yep.
And as someone who wants as much money in the club for us to have a better team next season, and as someone who, well, the only Celtic game I've intentionally missed was the Kilmarnock game 20 years and 2 days ago.
Yep.
In the last 30-odd years.
Impressive.
My concern is the lack of attendeeship, and do those 20,000 then decide to not renew their season book? What are we looking at doing to keep those people?
Well, it is a concern, Brian, and I think that, you know, anybody would be naive to think that they hadn't noticed, and it is hugely concerning. From the club's perspective, obviously we want to try and make the season ticket as attractive as possible, and there's various different factors included in that. You know, you're looking at pricing, looking at the match day experience. We spoke about safe standing before, other things that we're looking at, we're continuing to develop the family section. We've thought about a fan zone, so again, you know, providing somewhere for fans to come to Celtic Park early on a match day, maybe get a beer, maybe, you know, some food, have some DJs, bands. Again, talking about what you were looking at there in terms of exclusive content, that type of thing, some
face painting.
Hopefully a little bit more than face painting, to be fair, but to make it interesting for kids as well. So, you know, we've looked at a range of different activities for kids, good activities, not rubbishy ones, but pretty good activities that kids could come along with their parents, get involved in. But also you've got that opportunity for supporters that are a bit older, if they want to come along, get a beer. Maybe the Kerrydale bar is full. We know we're seeing that filling up in most occasions quite quickly. Obviously a wee bit different at the moment because attendances are a bit up and down, but you would like to think with a vibrant Celtic Park that would be filled quite quickly. So this would almost provide a bit of an overspill for a couple of thousand people. Mm-hmm. So it's by no means a done deal, don't get me wrong, but it is something that we are looking at to try and enhance the whole sort of Celtic Park experience on a match day. But we know that we know there's a challenge there. We certainly do.
It's one of my frustrations is that there's not more facilities that are easily accessed on non-match days. Also,
So it's about more than 90 minutes. It's about, you know, trying to use the stadium and use Celtic and Celtic Park and the footprint at Celtic Park to generate revenues beyond the 90 minutes that it's used for a football match. You know, there are other opportunities, and, you know, people have spoken about it before, about, you know, maybe coming up here on a non-match day to have a look around. Can you get a coffee? You know, can you get a seat? Is there a cafe anywhere about? There isn't. So I think these points aren't lost on the club, and obviously we need to look from a financial perspective whether or not they make business sense. But yes, we do, we do recognise that there has to be more of an attraction.
And as part of that, I had to, as anybody on coming approaching the from the main stand side, had to go through the works that's all going on in the front.
Yes.
So what is getting done? What's everything that's getting done at the front?
Well,
because some of the people listening to this live very far away.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, the frontage is changed probably beyond recognition with the school coming away. That's all been levelled off to create a whole new concourse at the front, which will lead right down to London Road, and then there's Kerrydale Street. You know, there's talk of various different themes, the Avenue of Heroes, that type of thing. But we'll have a nice tree-lined approach to Celtic Park. It'll be monoblocked. There'll be various different car parking, but it will certainly be a lot fresher, a lot cleaner, and you know, much more open than it ever was.
If it was made by Walt Disney, there'd also be music getting played, the Celtic song be getting played permanently along the Avenue of Heroes.
I don't want to give too much away, you never know.
So that's all getting, when will that be completed by?
Mid-April, I think, is scheduled to be complete. So, yeah, you know, we're into the first week in March, so, don't know, maybe 6 weeks? 6 weeks, hopefully, 6-7 weeks, it should all be done.
So then we give the end of the season, we give the stadium up for the Scottish Cup final?
We do, yep, we do. That's that goes over to the SFA, and then I think almost immediately after that it probably transfers to the Commonwealth for the Commonwealth Games.
And when do we get the stadium back from the Commonwealth Games, you know?
I think it's kind of early to mid-August. I think it's like 2 weeks after the games end.
Right.
So there's a process whereby the people at the Commonwealth Games hand back the stadium in the same condition as they received it. So I dare say that for the opening ceremony, they'll probably want to change some things around, so they have to put it back to the way it was. So I'm pretty certain second week in August we get it back.
Do we have a date yet for the beginning of next season? I'm just conscious of the flag day.
No, I know.
Because we've got to be at home on the first game of the season.
We do. I don't know. Someone asked this on Twitter the other day, and I don't have a date for the opening league game of the season. I believe that the qualifiers for the Champions League will kick off around about the 23rd of July, though.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got the 23rd, and then I think it's a week. And then I think a week later, you're back for the next set of games.
Right, well, one of the things I remember from the forum was Peter Lawwell suggesting that if our second qualifier was away first and then at home, there was a slim chance that we might actually be able to play the second qualifier at Celtic Park.
I think it's possible. The only danger with that is the preparatory work that needs to be carried out, because obviously you have to sell tickets for one, you have to let people know where the game's going to be played, you have to let the opposition team know where the game needs to be played or where the game is going to be played, and you have to get permission off UEFA as to how late you can leave it. And it just felt, I think, that there's a lot of kind of ifs and buts in there.
Mm-hmm.
So whilst you could technically have Celtic Park available, you might only know 4 or 5 days before.
So you're better just planning for it, not me.
I think so, to be honest with you. I'm certainly, that's the impression that I'm getting anyway, is that we might as well just accept the fact that for the first two, we won't be playing them at Celtic Park.
And it's going to be quite a logistical challenge, because I don't think we've confirmed that it's Murrayfield, have we?
I don't think that Murrayfield is actually confirmed, although from what I can gather, I think it looks like the most likely candidate without it actually being signed off.
There might be a spare stadium kicking around the south side of Glasgow by then.
I don't know. I think
there's going to be
transport links there. But yeah, I mean, if we take it outside Glasgow and it goes to Edinburgh, then there are obvious, you know, there are obvious difficulties in terms of transport, and the fact that most of our fans are based in West Central Scotland are going to have to make their way through to Edinburgh for the matches.
Do you know if we have any say on preventing and being TV saying it's a 6 o'clock kickoff or anything like that?
I don't, to be honest with you. I don't. I think.
Or do we, for the qualifiers? Are we in charge of selling the TV rights for that?
I think in the past we were, yeah. I think right. In the past we were. So that may influence it, but obviously, you know, the difficulties of getting into Edinburgh around about 5 or 6 o'clock at night, it's difficult. I know that Murrayfield, if you're coming from Glasgow, is at the right side of Edinburgh, but it can still be a bit of a challenge. So on the basis that it was going to be at Murrayfield, we've got the issue of transportation and buses. Now, what you've got to bear in mind is that companies like the First Bus and ScotRail and people like that are tied up in terms of their commitment to the Commonwealth Games, and it's going to reduce the availability of transport going the opposite direction. So we're speaking to a number of people at the moment as to what the potential is for transport and how that's going to work for us.
Maybe even simple things like ask ScotRail to put extra carriages on.
I've got a meeting with them next week, so we'll see what comes out of that. But yeah, I'm meeting with ScotRail next Wednesday, I think it is.
Okay, I kept you long enough, and that's talking about the future and things. One other question. I'm away outside with my Mac and my bonnet, and there's somebody else with an oversized umbrella to say the game is over, the Rebels have won.
They need to be raining.
The sprinklers are on.
Well, aye, you could do it there, aye.
Where were you 20 years ago?
I'll tell you exactly where I was. I was in a club in Bells Hill, and I was with our old commercial director, our commercial manager at the time, Frank McNally, and Frank and I both worked here, and we've seen it on TV, kind of came up as a bit of a news flash, and we just thought, do we still have jobs? We don't know. And that literally, I mean, that's honest to God, we didn't know whether or not we would still be employed, because we worked for the old board. We both started before the takeover, and then when it was announced that the club had been taken over, we just it was uncertainty for us in that, from that perspective. So we genuinely just didn't know. So it was quite worrying. As much as anything, it was exciting, you know, from a fan's perspective. You were excited because it was the start of what turned out to be a great new dawn for the club. So on one hand, you were thinking, you know, this could be us, a real springboard. But on the other hand, you're thinking, I've got a mortgage. What happens now? I mean, because we could go in on Friday and they could say, right, listen, everybody's laid off. We just didn't know. But Bells Hill, that's where I was. It might have been the Derby Inn, actually, I can't remember. But I think it might have been the Derby Inn in Bells Hill. That's exactly where I was when it was announced that the war was over and the Rebels had won.
And you came in the next day and you were still in a job?
I came in the next day and I was still in a job. And then the next couple of days were actually really quite funny, because if I'm right in thinking, I'm sure that was a Thursday night that happened, and then there was the Friday where everything all started to take place, and I can remember going into a stationery cupboard to get envelopes, trying to mind my own business and keep getting on with things as you do, and there was a share deal taking place in the stationery cupboard. I won't say by which director and who else was there, but as you can imagine, I just kind of popped in and went, oh, sorry, and turned and walked out. But there was things going on all over the place that day. Great memories, honestly, great memories, and it was brilliant to be involved in it all, albeit not being a part of it. But we were here at the time and seeing it all as it happened. So.
And then looking out the window, when this was getting rebuilt, were you still here? And everything was, we just played at Hampden on match days. Everything was still here.
We just played at Hampden on match days. So what we had to do was, part of my duties was to hire a low loader with a high ab, in order that we could pick up a porter cabin and get it transported to Hampden, so that it would be on site for 10 o'clock on a match day, if it was a 3 o'clock kickoff on a Saturday, and then make sure that we had enough staff to man it. And it was manual tickets. I mean, tickets were all printed in books, so you had to take the tickets over with the float, with the staff, make sure the loader was there, get the high ab, sight the porter cabin, sell the tickets, get the money, count it, bank it, make sure security corps came, took it away, and then make sure the high ab came and picked up the porter cabin in time for the game finishing, so that there was no obstacles to prevent people getting out of the stadium safely, and then I could go home. That was a long season. They were nice people at Hampden, to be honest with you. They made us as welcome as they could, but you just really wanted to go back to Celtic Park. And in between all of that, the stadium was getting built, so we had seating manifests that we were trying to put into a ticketing system that we didn't really know how to work at the time, and it was all quite, looking back, it was quite innocent, but it was fun.
Okay, well, thanks very much, John Paul.
A pleasure, thank you.
Okay, cheers.
Grand.
Hopefully you enjoyed that. I always find John Paul Taylor very helpful, illuminating on Celtic matters, and very honest. Ask him a question, he gives you an answer. So if you're looking to engage with John Paul Taylor, you can email him at Celtic Park, telephone him at Celtic Park, or on Twitter you can find him at CelticFCSLO. That's Celtic FC, S for Sugar, L for Lima, O for Oscar. And any questions or queries about the club, or particularly he's keen to find out people with issues on stewarding, etc., give him a bell, or tweet, or email, or whatever. Next up on the podcast is Neely Mocking Jr. with St Anthony. But that's all for me. That was John Paul Taylor, and this is me, Harry Brady, saying goodnight. Goodnight. This is my